Greetings to you, friends. It is I, D. Trussell, and you are listening to the Duncan Trussell Family Hour podcast. And we have a glorious podcast for you today with the great Jay Larson. We're going to jump right into that. But first, some quick business. Much thanks to the beautiful Saints over at Squarespace for sponsoring this episode of the DTFH. Head over to squarespace.com/Duncan. And when you're ready to launch, use offer code Duncan to get 10% off your first order of a website or a domain. These are the glory days of website design. It's not like the old days when you had to glue cat toys to your nipple, cover your groin and chest and stomach with salmon scent and lay in a dark alley in the website district of your town, making those quivering, mewling sounds that would hopefully summon a web designer who would look at the cat toys, size them up, and based on a web designer's personality, accept them or reject them by slapping you as hard as he could in the neck. This was a nightmare. And if you did find a great web designer who accepted your offering, then it was likely they would overcharge or take too long to build the website or 50% of the time go completely insane and murder your family. These days are long gone, thank God. I don't mean to summon up dark memories for those of you who remember these horrific times, because now you can go to squarespace.com and they have everything you need to start building a beautiful website today. They've got shopping cart functionality so you can start selling your clay figurines or sweaty socks online. They've got beautiful templates created by world-class designers that you can pick and choose from to assemble an incredible website. Not only that, but Squarespace sizes to any device. You don't have to worry about that. And they now have the ability to do email campaigns so you can send data out to your millions of subscribers. I've got a new bag of socks, folks. Squarespace, it's an amazing service. And if you want to see an example of one of the most beautiful websites your eyes have ever seen, go to DuncanTrussell.com. That is a Squarespace website. So try them out. Go to squarespace.com/Duncan. And when you're ready to launch, use offer code Duncan and you will get 10% off your first purchase of a website or a domain. Thank you, Squarespace. Before I forget, pals, on June 7th, I'm going to be doing a podcast. It's a conversation with David Nickturn, who's been teaching me, who's my meditation teacher at the Samsara Center in Echo Park. He's awesome, and I love chatting with him. I'm going to be there on June 7th, but he is doing a mindfulness meditation teacher training program. If you want to get your mind blown by someone who's in one of the wildest lineages of Buddhism ever, then this is definitely a great course for you to take. Okay, loves, without further ado, I present to you one of the funniest storytellers walking the face of the earth today. If you want to see a great comedy special, check out Me Being Me. You can find that by going to jlarsoncomedy.com. Now, everybody, please welcome the host of the Throughline podcast, the great Jay Larson. Jay, welcome to the DTFH, my friend.
Woo, baby, I love it.
I love you. You're so awesome, man. When I did your podcast, you left. I felt happy for like a week after hanging out with you.
Me too, bro.
Cool.
You know what's funny is I was like talking to a buddy of mine on the way here and told him I was coming with you, and I'm like, God, he's like the most peaceful creature. And then we're walking in together, and you're like, you know what fucking makes me mad? And I was like, Duncan, you get mad?
Fuck yeah. Dude, I mean, this is like a thing that is like a danger, because if you, like, yeah, some people don't want to admit that.
Yeah.
For some reason.
What, like, that they get mad?
Yeah, or that people want to, like, peaceful people, they get home and they're assholes.
Yeah,
totally. I was just reading about this. It's like on stage and off stage. And so, yeah, like, you can never believe the way someone acts on stage. You got to be a fly on the wall when they're getting weird mail or bad bills, or you know what I mean?
What's weird mail?
You know what I'm like, you know, some unexpected massive fucking bill or subpoenaed or whatever the fuck. Because it's like on stage, anybody can act like
Well, it's the same as like online.
Yeah.
On social media. Yeah. Everyone can look beautiful, but just, I always have to constantly remind myself, like, that's not everything.
No way. And it's tricky. And then you'll start going nuts. So like anytime I can, I try to admit like, oh no, man, I get fucking pissed, just to make sure that like, you know, like in the old days of media, you would have static personalities in the sense you'd see like Jay Leno, and he's pretty much the same Jay Leno every night. David Letterman, same David Letterman. Every night, a little more grumpy than Leno, which was awesome.
Totally.
Because you'd see him be in a bad fucking mood, and it was cool. Like, it made people excited. But then you watch Sean Hannity. I don't know if you watch Fox. I hate watch Fox all day fucking long. And, like, and I love it. Like, I when I say hate watch, I mean, I love it. It's like, he's an entertainer. But when you see Hannity, O'Reilly, Rachel Maddow, I don't care what side of the political spectrum, you only see the same persona pretty much.
True. I've seen some guys switch over, like Don Lemon. He is just totally, you know Don Lemon?
Yeah, sure.
He's totally just thrown the towel and be like, I'm not a journalist anymore. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
No, I'm on the left. Yeah. And I'm going to be, he's like, you know, take a look at the clip.
Yeah.
And you're just like, oh, dude. Remember, like, journalists used to be in the middle. They would report the news. That's just not the case anymore.
They were like robots.
Yeah.
And they would say in this kind of like weird, and I think that was the idea of the journalistic patter, was that it was to not convey bias. You were just supposed to be like, and then they started conveying bias, and then the whole thing got split apart. And now you don't know what the fuck you're watching, because on one side, it's like all representing one paradigm, and the other side, it's another. And everyone's like, oh, fuck it. It's all just entertainment.
Yeah, no shit at this point.
But, you know, anytime anybody breaks their character for the world, it's usually a gift. Because usually I've noticed like the shit I'm embarrassed about or I'm trying to hide, anytime I finally admit it, that's when people be like, thanks for saying that.
100%. That's when people relate to you because you're being vulnerable. And I was with my buddy the other night who's an architect. And I go, you probably don't go through this, but I'm like, as a comedian, I had like a bad day the other day. And like, you ever have those days where you just start off and things are a little off? Like, even as much as like you get to an intersection and you go to wave someone on and they look at you like, go ahead, dick face. And you're like, what did I do?
Yeah.
And then for the rest of the day, it's like that. Yeah. And I was like, I get to the comedy store and I had a weird interaction with two comics. And I'm like, oh no, is this going to happen on stage? And then I went to the green room and it was a weird, I'm like, I'm a little off right now. And I was telling him about this and he goes, no, yeah, I have those days. What do you think? It's just you? He goes, I have days that I'm like, do people see me? Am I even alive? You know? Yeah. And he's an architect. And I'm like, oh, all right. Yeah, we're all going through the same stuff. It's just a matter of being willing to admit it and be vulnerable so people can let themselves in and be like, oh, thank God you feel that way.
Yeah. Man. That's like the people to not trust are the people who seem to be universally enlightened. And that's when you like people get disappointed all the fucking time. Like, how often do you hear about this? But Tony Robbins, for example, that just came out on BuzzFeed about Tony Robbins.
What?
Oh, I don't like him. It was a Me Too thing. He was taking showers in front of people, according to BuzzFeed. It's like, you know, he hasn't been to court yet. I don't know how much of it's real or not, but it's, and so what ends up happening is like massive disappointment, because people, when they see Tony Robbins, when they see anybody like that,
they hold him to this expectation of being perfect or godlike.
Yeah. And if you let people do that to you, you are fucking up, man, because you can only disappoint them unless you're actually godlike. Like, if you were a god, then you have to let people know, I am like, I'm not fallible. I am like a perfect being of love and light, a transcendent entity channeling the cosmos. And what I'm saying is theoretically, and I really mean theoretically, if you were to get enlightened, Jay, and you probably will, you would have to be honest about that too.
Yeah.
You wouldn't get to lie and be like, no, I don't get pissed off. I feel horrible sometimes. You'd have to be like, I actually am happy all the time, which is the other side of it, which is weird. You ever get to that point where you're like, getting like some, you're hitting a stride, you're in the fucking zone, you're hit, you're like crushing it, you've got some fucking heat, and you are maybe around friends who are not necessarily there, and you want to lie or summon up negativity to harmonize with their reality because you feel like your success will offend them.
Yes, 100%. And I also have been on the other side of the coin.
Me too.
Where you're like, I can feel people pulling away from me that are doing well. Like, ever have a friend who's like crushing and got something really good going on, and you're trying to, you can see it. Like, it took me a long time to see that, though, because now we're at the point where we were talking about before, you know, we have friends that are like, everyone's on, all of your friends at this point, when yes. you've been in the game this long, are on a show, have a show. We're yeah. trying to, like, four of us are trying to figure out a golf date, and everyone's got a TV show. And I'm like the only one without a TV show. And I'm like, all right, but I don't, I can, so I've been on both sides. I've felt myself being like, oh shit, like, I can't talk about what's good for me right now. And then I've been on the other one where I'm like, oh man, I start bringing up like what sucks, and I see them kind of like pull away or adjust, and you're like, oh God, just don't bring it up, Jay. Just yeah. like, don't bring it up. Like, you'll get there, you know?
Well, this is to me, I remember once I was in New York with Ari. Ari was is crushing it usually. And I realized he was padding his description of what was happening to him because he recognized that he was crushing it. And at the time, I was not.
Yeah.
And it made me feel so bad because I'm like, motherfucker. But he could sense that, like, you know, I hate having to exert a magnanimous attitude towards a friend who's having success and it's hurting me. And you're like, the fact that this is hurting me
yeah.
shows that right now I am like in a weird spot.
Yeah. And so what do you do in that? Do you like just back away and give them space? Cause I did it. This happened to me recently with a friend, and they got a show, and there was kind of like this promise that I was going to be involved. And I never asked. They yeah. came to me about it. You're going to be this, you're going to do this. And I was like, cool. And I never, and then they got picked up, and then they went radio silence. And then I was like, hey, is there a thing there? And they're like, oh, blah, blah, blah. And I didn't get it. And then they wrote me this long apology that they didn't need to do. You know what I mean? I was like, yeah, I never expected anything.
Yeah.
And then they got, then all of a sudden their life becomes consumed with that thing, because it takes so much time, as I'm sure you're seeing.
I can't talk. Hold on.
You can't say that.
Well, my seashells I've been collecting.
Yeah.
I'm consumed with a collection
yeah, either,
of seashells.
You know, when you have something that consumes you like that.
Yes.
You've seen our friends go through it. And then I kind of just like, so I was like, before they went to go do this show, I sent a long email saying like, yo, crush this, you earned this, like just gave like a motivational thing and saying like congrats. And then we talked once, and then like I was like, oh, I'm gonna let them do their thing, I know they're busy. And then they reach out to me like, hey, you around tomorrow to like talk? And I was like, yeah. And then like we talked, and we talked for like a half hour, and he's like, yo, I just wanted to like catch up and like touch base. And I was like, kind of like had to like leave it on his terms to call yeah. me, because I was just like, I don't know. It wasn't that I didn't know where I fit. I just kind of wanted to give him space to do what he needed to do and not feel like I was like padding in a way to think. I don't want him to think. I don't want to get in his head while he's doing what he needs to do to think that he may owe me anything.
Right.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So when he reached out, as soon as he reached out, I was like, yeah, I'll call you, but. And then I called and he wasn't there. So I called 3 hours later. Like, I'm like, I'll stay on it to make sure the call happens. And it was awesome.
Yeah,
you know?
Man.
Yeah.
It's like, the problem is, it is really hard to not be selfish. Like, you know, like we're stuck in a body, and you look down and you see your body, and you look in the mirror and you see your face, and you, no matter how you try to get out of it, if you have a body, then you are literally at the center of your own universe. There's
100%.
No way to not be like self-centered. And then we live in a world where like that self-centered attitude is like taught as the way to be.
Yeah.
Ayn
Rand lived by it and thinks every artist should live by it.
Do you subscribe to that philosophy?
I don't subscribe to Ayn Randism or anything like
What's
that.
What's it called? There's another name for it philosophically. I'm not very familiar with it.
I'm not sure. I just, you know, I love The Fountainhead. I love that damn book. It was amazing to me.
I never got through it. Like, I started reading every time I start reading it, but it's some kind of like it's capitalism, right? It's like the notion.
Yeah, but like almost like self-capitalism. You know what I mean? Like you do whatever you need to do. And we see it with artists. Like you become, your art becomes more important than anything else. And no one, excuse me, around you is going to matter. You know what I mean? Like you're going to be like, oh yeah, sorry. It's my art or it's my passion. For her, it was like artists and people in general. You should pursue whatever your ultimate goal is. And I think it had something to do with her idea of like, you know, of karma. For her, like karma wasn't a thing that was, you know, dependent upon how you act towards other people. You just go for what you need to go for.
Okay. Yeah. I've heard this before. This is kind of like your desires or the thing or your dreams. It's like that's the same thing that like makes a caterpillar turn into a butterfly. And that's not a thing to be ashamed of. It's not a thing to like, the worst thing you could do is subvert that impulse to please someone else.
Oh, yeah.
Because the universe wants butterflies. It doesn't want mushy fucking cocooned up things. It wants.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm on the fringe of all that, I think. Mm-hmm. I'm not full onto anything. I look at it like, yeah, that's 100% true. And recently I've been finding the more I just focus on my own constitution and my family and what my goals are without like stepping on people to get to those things, you know, to still be considerate, to still be mindful, to still look at situations and be like, oh, you know, be careful about that person because they're in a fragile place right now. So maybe you don't bring up X. And I'll always say it to my wife, like, hey, just a heads up. When we go there today, will you do me a favor and make sure to say to so-and-so's wife, because I know he told me she's been sensitive about stuff. And like, I just think I always meddle a little bit because I think that's what love is. It's like you see something that someone's going through and you make a point like, hey, maybe it's not organic for you to ask them to go to yoga together. But like, I think she could really use it just by something that she told me, because I look at it. I'm like, well, I hope people do that for me. You know, like every now and then I'm like, I wish my wife would tell my friends like, hey, Jay's been going through a tough time. You know, maybe you know what I mean?
Yeah,
and
man.
It's because I think that like we all need someone to like keep an eye on us, you know?
Yeah, because it's kind of like, okay, the whole Ayn Rand fucking like art thing or whatever, the fulfillment of your own personal desires and all that stuff, on one level, it totally makes sense. But what comes to mind to me is my new experience being a dad, my new experience being a husband, the living in a family. And that fucking shit does not fly in that situation. If I'm starting, you know what I mean? If I'm like, in any time I've tried to exert that energy as like, listen, I need to like, this thing's got to get done. I got to go down and play on my synths.
Yeah.
It's so embarrassing and it hurts. It doesn't feel right. Whereas like the moment I kind of like give that up and just hold my son, or try to help a little bit more than my selfish fucking ass and my habits and instincts tell me to.
Yeah.
It's like instantaneous lightening up to the point where whatever thing I was trying to shit out, whatever my fucking idea of like some half-baked idea of making some like pseudo Radiohead synth track when I was high on fucking ketamine or something seems like some dumb, basic, essentially misunderstanding of what it means to exist in the world in a happy way.
Yeah. Well, I think at the same time, there are times when my wife will say stuff like, hey, do you want me to like take the kids tomorrow morning and then you can just like, you know, have some time to yourself? And I'm just like, oh, yeah.
Yes.
I would love that.
Yeah.
And that's not, luckily, when you have a really good partnership, that's her being unselfish and allowing me to be selfish without me having to be like, selfish. At the same time, I still think it's healthy to be like, to ask for that time. You know
what
I mean? Like, hey, you know what? Like, I need some space and I need some time. Like, my son was a perfect example. We're at this like kids' fair on Saturday at their school. We've been there 4 hours. That's a lot. They're like running around. Kate and I volunteered 2 hours each. And then we're with the kids. And my son like asked me to pick him up, which he never does. And he's like, Daddy. And he goes, I need some alone time. And I was like, you got it, bro. I go, can we get out of here? And I was like, yeah. And like, you know, there were times with my kids, I say it all the time, like, I need some space, dude. I'm going to need some space. You got to go right over there. Just go over there and play. I need a little space. And they'll be like, okay. And they just, The great thing about the kids at that age is they don't take things personally, especially if you tell them, don't take this personal. I just need some space. Dad needs to breathe. And then I wait like my 20 minutes and then I go over and grab him, hug him, kiss him, be like, what do you want to do? And then we do something. But he knows, hey, did you have fun that whole time I was taking my space? And of course they were.
You're a great dad.
I appreciate that. And but a great I try. Person. And I still have faults.
Fuck yeah. I mean, you got to have faults if you're going to be a great dad.
Yeah.
Who wants a perfect fucking dad? A perfect dad is a recipe for disaster.
Did I tell you when we did the podcast? So I don't know if I told you this, but like one time my wife was out of town. I'm with the two kids. I'm giving them, I had this plan for how the night was going to go and I had the house set up and I just kept hitting obstacle after obstacle with the kids and like they were in wacky moods. And my son just kept getting grouchy and then he cried because he was upset about like he just wanted it to go his way. And I had this plan that was going to be perfect for the night. And it just like, then I snapped and I yelled at him and then he cried even more. And then I was like, I go, you know what? Come over here to the couch before dinner. And I go, listen, I'm sorry. I shouldn't yell at you like that. I had an idea and it didn't go that way. I go, but something else you need to know about Dad. I go, Dad runs a little hot. Every now and then, I'm gonna yell or I'm going to get upset. I go, but it's not about you. I'm working at it. And he's 3 years old, mind you. And I'm telling him all this stuff. And I go, so you understand? I'm not mad at you. This is just something with me. And he goes, okay, Dad. And now the other day, like now they know, like there are times that I like yell and they go, okay, and they do it, but they never take it personal. And I don't know if it registered or not, or if it was right or if it was wrong, but I'm just like, man, I wonder if anyone in my family had ever just accepted my dad for who he was and said to us like, oh, your dad's just being a loon right now. Give him space. Get away from your dad. He's being a dick. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
If we would have just, if everyone might have just reacted differently to him.
Fuck yeah.
I don't know, but that's how it's going in my house.
If my dad had said that to me at any point in my life,
yeah,
it would have been so empowering to our relationship. And I would have felt so much more comfortable around him,
yeah,
so much more connected. That kind of display of vulnerability, but also mixed in with like, but I'm your dad.
Yeah.
And this is the way it is. You know, and this, so that you're not like going to them as a therapist or some, or you're not burdening them with having to be more than a 3-year-old. You're just saying, this is the terrain we're on right now.
Yeah. And you know what? It gave me this flashback when I was like, I had been in LA for like 2 years and I worked at the Cheesecake Factory in Brentwood. And all the dudes there would like play hoops at this like gym on like Tuesday mornings. And I would get heated because I'm super competitive. Like I would get heated. And so finally, I went to my buddy. I'm like, hey, man, I'm not coming anymore. And he's like, why not? I'm like, I don't like who I am when I play. Yeah. I get too aggressive. Yeah. And it's like, you know, blah, blah, blah. And I just don't feel good. And he goes, that's what we love about you. Like, we love that you get heated like that. And it was the first time I'm like, oh, they're not asking me to change. They're like, yeah, we know that about you. It's like having a friend that's a dickhead. Do you have any friends that are like just a little bit of a douche?
Yes.
But you know they're a douche and they're not hiding it. And you're like, yeah, that's what we kind of love about him.
Yeah.
Is that you're a douche.
Yeah. This attitude is one I'm trying to adopt more and more because my one big fault I have is this weird like trying to fix people thing.
Yeah.
And nobody wants that. Like nobody wants to be fixed. People just like to be listened to.
Yeah.
That's what I've like noticed, and it seems to be kind of the ultimate. If you're around somebody, to just listen,
yeah,
and not just listen with your ears but with your eyes and listen with your whole body,
yeah,
and just listen, just that, that seems to be, and that means, so that if someone's, you know, a douche or whatever the fuck it is, if you just let them, like you're saying, allow the space within which they can be that, it's like paradoxically suddenly their douche quality kind of like begins to dissolve, because,
and it's them. You know, it's just like sometimes people, you can't have when you have, say you're at 70% energy in your body, right? And you eat a Snickers, so you go up to 120.
Yeah.
You're coming down to 20 now because you went up 50. Now you're going to come down 50.
Yeah.
You need it. There's got to be a balance in the world. There's going to be douchey people.
Yeah.
Why do we need to change everyone? There wouldn't be humor without douchey people. There wouldn't, you know, there, you have to have negative quality. No one's going to be perfect. And the second we put that expectation for the, which is why I think like Yelp is a huge problem. everyone being able to have an opinion is a huge problem. When we were kids, you would go to crappy restaurants. You would just do that with your family. Right. And you'd be like, Ma, why do we come here? And she goes, I don't know. It's close. This is where we go.
Yeah.
And now it's like, if people don't have like the ultimate experience, they take a place down. And you're like, no one can be held to this level of perfection.
No.
What are you doing? It's never going to happen. Like the whole Game of Thrones thing. Everyone was like, what a terrible season. And you're like, what do you want them to do? And why are you turning on them now?
Yeah.
They gave you glorious entertainment for years, yeah. And they're like, we gotta end sometime.
Yeah.
Sorry. Seinfeld, the last two seasons of Seinfeld, those characters were written for the characters that developed over 7 years.
Right.
You know? So they came a little hammy, and and you're just like, all right, yeah, whatever.
Yeah, man.
It's just it. It's just what it is.
It's like you ever hear the amount of energy the brain apparently exerts to filter out shit.
17.8%.
I guess a crap. Yeah, 17%, maybe more than that.
Sure.
Because so much extraneous stuff is going down that you have to spend all this energy ignoring shit, right? And
that's why I do TM.
Do you do TM?
Yeah.
Did that happen after Twin Peaks?
Yes, but it wasn't because of David Lynch.
Okay, well, we'll put a pin in that and get back to it real quick. But yeah, it is connected to TM, and which is essentially the idea is that so if Game of Thrones mm-hmm. is seriously upsetting you,
uh-huh.
that's painful.
Yeah,
that's just basic pain. So like a show that was meant to be something entertaining is hurting you, and so it's hurting you to the point that you're going online. And you're signing petitions to get it redone, and you're emailing people. Mm-hmm. And if you just sit still for a second and feel what that feels like, you'll realize like, oh my God, this is burning me. Like I'm being burnt by an expectation, and that's called being caught. And,
interesting.
And so, yeah. And so the idea is like we all have it. It's
yeah.
not just Game of Thrones. It's like, good God, the fucking speaking of Seinfeld, man, I can't watch Seinfeld. Why? Because of that bass lick in it, that boop, I don't know what I like. I've thought to myself, like, did something happen to me when I was a kid where there was like a Seinfeld-esque bass lick happening simultaneously, so that I have some repressed memory connected to that fucking sound because my reaction to the Seinfeld bass does not match a Seinfeld bass. It means like something happened to me when I was hearing a bow, but the bow. I don't know what, and I don't want to know right now what it is. But what I mean is, I don't get to enjoy Seinfeld, not because Seinfeld sucks, but because I'm stuck there.
Yeah.
Right. And so the more of those things you have in your life, the more pain you're going to be in, and the less of those things you have in life, the more you're going to fucking love your life. That's like, let me see. Shit, where'd it go? Oh man. Right here. Hold on.
What was it?
It's this Zen book. Well, anyway, it starts off with this.
What's the name of it?
The problem is, that's the problem. I can never remember the name of any of these fucking Zen books.
The Zen and the Art of Motorcycle Maintenance?
You can make it, you know, River and Stream.
Dude, have you ever seen Rivers and Tides?
No.
Documentary, Rivers and Tides. I'll remind you, if everyone out there, Rivers and Tides.
Rivers and Tides.
It's about this artist who goes out into the wilderness, and this is what his art is. He takes things in the world and then just turns them into art, and some of them only last. Like at one point, he goes to this river and he goes around and forages for this red clay that's like buried in the river.
Yeah.
And then he collects it all, turns into a big ball, right?
Yeah.
And goes to the top of the river and drops it in. And when it lands, the water just goes and turns like metallic red.
Whoa.
From the clay. And it lasts, I don't know, 20 seconds, and then it's done.
Wow.
But he does other things like builds these structures, and like he's fucking rad.
So he's like working with impermanence. He's like, that's his medium.
I don't know, but
that's
the name of my new autobiography, Working with Impermanence.
Yeah, man, Working with fucking Impermanence. Well, this is the... is the medium, I guess, that we're dealing with. And this is why our brains get so fucked up when a friend is like having some success, or when we're having some success and a friend isn't, is because we can so easily forget this is not a permanent experience. It's like when you run into someone, and it's very rare, whenever I run into it, man, I kind of enjoy it. But when you run into someone experiencing a little temporary success, mm-hmm. who's managed to get a big fucking head, and you realize they're like acting, I rarely see this. It's a stereotype.
Yeah.
The person who's got some fame and turns into a deep, hard-baked fuckhead, right?
Yeah. You know what? I haven't seen that really that much either.
I've seen it. I was a talent coordinator at the Comedy Store.
I remember.
It once during the entire time.
Yeah.
And it was shocking to the point of being like, I wanted to be around it, because it's like, wow, it's a real dick. Like,
damn.
Someone whose fame has actually gone to their head. They're actually alienating people, imagining that this is going to last. And it's like, man, it doesn't, it can't last. Similarly, you run into people in the opposite situation, mm-hmm. where there's a little drought happening. And it is going to their fucking head because they think this is going to last. And so now they're also acting in an imbalanced way, completely out of fear, yeah. not realizing like, oh, no, man, you'll get some success. Don't worry. It's going to come. It'll happen. And then that's going to go away, too. And so this is the nature of the beast, so to speak. And the more I get caught on either side of that fucking spectrum, the more I'm not able, paradoxically, to do the activities or to do the creative output yeah. that would make anything worthwhile.
Yeah.
Because my brain is trying to hold on to one spot, right?
Yeah, well, you know what? When you said earlier, when I was saying you, I had that day where everything seemed a little off. It had been like 2 months since I had like had an off day. You know what I mean? For like 2 months, I had been like good moods. Everything was going well, even though I wasn't like, work things weren't popping or whatever. I was content within my world. You know what I mean? Family, wife, everything. I was content. And then I had this day and I'm like, oh, I haven't felt one of these days in a minute. Whereas there have been other times where, you know, you go months with like horrible days and you're like, what the fuck, man? How do I get out of this? And then you get out for 2 days and then you'll come back to it. And so, yeah, you have to find it's for me when I find the balance within myself and I'm just focused on what I can do within myself. You know what I mean? That's when everything seems to like straighten out.
Fuck yeah.
Yeah.
And that is finding that spot is the, that it's always there. It's like, so for me, I'm anxious. I get anxiety and I can distract myself from the anxiety and even imagine the anxiety's not there, but it's still there. It's an undercurrent.
What gives it to you? Do you know?
Oh my God. I'll tell you on the next time I do your podcast.
Yeah.
Only because it's too much. It will go on and on.
Yeah,
and on.
Yeah.
But one of my teachers, Ram Dass, says it's these levels are happening all at once.
Yeah.
So on one level, you are maybe absolutely terrified mm-hmm. about losing everything. For me, you know, like, the paradox of having a baby is like, you know, we put him down and he stops crying and he goes to sleep.
Yeah.
And then you're like, oh my God, is he okay?
Yeah, for sure.
You know what I mean? And it's under there. It's under there. And you have to sort of like divert your attention from that level to the next level, which is like, actually he's sleeping peacefully. And if I go in to check on him neurotically, it's going to create tears.
Dude. One of the first things ever when I was having a kid. So like, you know, family members send you like gifts and stuff like that, you know, cribs, changing table, all that kind of shit. Well, my mother-in-law's friend sent us this mat you put under the mattress. And if the baby doesn't roll over or move every 20 minutes, it beeps and it like prevents SIDS. Right.
Whoa.
So we're like, We're getting the room ready and I'm putting this thing in and I'm sitting there with my wife and I go, what are we doing? And she's like, what do you mean? I go, are we really going to live in a world where we need something to help us feel safer about the fact that we're not going to lose the thing that we love? I'm like, get this thing the fuck out of here.
Yeah.
I don't want that. Why are we ever going to, why don't we just get a rubber car? You know what I mean? Like, what are we doing?
Yeah.
Life is going to happen, and let's live it freely.
Whoa.
And let things, whatever happens to us happens, and we'll deal with it. But I would rather live freely then, and she was like, 100%. I mean, she doesn't always agree. Like, sometimes I'll leave the house unlocked at night, and she'll be like, you know, you left the house unlocked last night.
Fuck.
And I'm like, I go, yeah. And she goes, that doesn't concern you? And I'm like, we're still here. They didn't get us last night. We'll lock it tonight in case they come by. But we're good.
Dude, I will realize I haven't locked up the house. I will be laying there.
Yeah.
Thinking, like, about forensic files. Yeah. Knowing the alarm isn't set, the house is unlocked.
Yeah.
And then I'll just drift off to sleep thinking like, well, I hope we don't get strangled.
Just roll the dice tonight.
I hope I don't wake up tied up.
Yeah.
Like that, the Golden State Killer, you know, that motherfucker would tie up the husband and like put plates on his head so that if he moved and the plates dropped and while he was like raping the wife, you know?
Jesus, Duncan. Mm.
That's neither here nor there. I'm sorry to bring it up, but it's definitely set your security. So I got to get a better chair. Every time I move, it sounds like I'm farting. So this to me is like one of the amazing things about you is that you have the most simultaneously edgy personality and this like amazing, wild comedian, true comedian self. That seems really well balanced with being a dad. And a lot of times comedians are not so, how would you say, family oriented.
Sure.
Some are, but you seem to have really in some way or another, like you just seem to have a natural talent for being a father. And I can't think of anything better than that to be on the planet. Like if I had to pick between being the funniest person that ever walked the face of the earth and being a good dad, I've become so fucked up that I would rather be a good dad. And that's a mess, isn't it?
No, I think that's exactly what you want to be. You know what I mean? I would always want to be a good dad. Instead, you're saying it's fucked up for you to want to be a better dad than a comedian.
But you,
no, but that's the selfish thing you've been talking about, like letting go of. Because if you want to be the best comedian of all time, you're going to be selfish. If you're going to be, even if you're going to be remotely successful, you're going to be selfish. If you look at all the top comedians right now, do you think Kevin Hart, I'm not saying Kevin Hart can't be the best dad. I'm not saying that. But how much is he doing? So how much are you home? You know what I mean? Now, granted, we have FaceTime. He's clearly providing financially, but at the same time you're just like, well, how much are you able to help your kids with a tiny problem that will help them deal with giant problems down the road?
Right.
You know what I mean? So for me, I put it this way. The other day my son, we did a trip to Boston together 3 weeks ago, just me and him, first time ever, and he never takes showers. He still takes baths. And like we kept saying like, hey, when you turn 5 you're gonna take showers. He's like, yeah, daddy. And he never did. So we went on this trip. I'm like, you know what we're going to do on this trip? And he goes, well, I go, showers, bro. And he's like, okay, dad. And now he's taking a shower every day since. Cool. He loves them. So the other day we were home and my wife was with my daughter. And I was like, hey, bud, you want to grab a quick shower? And he's like, yeah. So we hop in there and I'm sitting there. And he's like, I'm standing on the water with half the water getting on him and half on me. And he's like, you know, there's toys down there. He's standing there just playing, talking. And I'm looking at him and I'm like, not only have I never did I ever take a shower with my dad? I never learned how to shower from my dad. I never learned how to shave from my dad. And I never, that I can remember, because he left when I was 2, slept under a roof in the same house with my dad.
Whoa.
My son in the morning will get up, come in the bed at like 7:15 and be like, hey, dad. And I'm like, hey, big boy. Sometimes we'll just chill. You know, my wife's there. Sometimes he goes to my wife. Like, whatever. They wake us up, which is the greatest thing in the world. That never happened ever in my life.
Wow.
And I was just sitting there taking a shower with him and being like, God, how amazing is this? Like, I love that we get to, I taught him how to shower and now we're just chilling in here and he gets to like the idea of being comfortable around his dad with his family. I mean, we're not going to take showers together forever, no. You know? And
I took a shower with my dad until he passed. We took showers every day that I was with him.
Are you for real?
No. Fucked up thing ever.
That was really fucked up to fuck with me like that. I'm like, Jesus, Duncan, how old were you when your dad passed? You know what I mean? But like, so for me, when you say that, I have this new philosophy that at least for this like idea that I'm working on, that parenting skips a generation.
Whoa.
You know what I mean? Because like I'm sitting there looking at it and I'm like, oh, I didn't have anyone to parent me. My dad didn't parent me. My mom's a single mom of four. She's doing her best. And now I'm coming in and I'm looking at my kids. And now granted, my wife came from a super solid background. Her parents are still together. They and I'm not saying parents need to stay together. They just still need to be parents and be communicative. And I'm not saying my mom was an amazing woman and parent in a lot of things, but I think I said this when we were chatting on my podcast, is like my mom never said, hey, today's your dad's birthday. You need to give him a call, you know? And that would be her being unselfish. That would be her, no matter how bad she hated him, that should be an element of parenting and being a mother, is saying, you need to have a father in your life.
Right.
You need to call your father. You need that to be. That was never a case in my house. I don't know my dad's birthday.
Whoa.
You know, I don't know. I never knew his birthday. I never knew their wedding anniversary. I never knew any of that. You know, like it just wasn't something that like ever came up. That means my dad was having birthdays by himself somewhere with his wife or whoever, whatever he was doing. And we were off living our life, not a part of his day. And that to me, if you look. First of all, I'm a firm believer that every single one of us is connected through somewhere else. I ever tell you this vision I've had? I had this vision one time. I had this vision of this big giant orb, right? In space.
Yeah.
With all spinning balls around it.
Yeah.
You know, almost looking like an atom. And then I just had this this thing came to me that when we're born or become, you know, a human, one of those balls goes and shoots down inside one of us, becomes our soul.
Whoa.
We live. When we die, it goes back to the ball and feeds back into this one universal thing.
Shit.
So almost like we're all a part of each other because we're living. And it's so I always think of it as like you're just here to hopefully try to be your best. You're going to make mistakes and have faults, but you just, whatever that knowledge is that you're going to gain, positive, negative feelings, successes, failures, you're going to take back and put into the greater good again. You know what I mean? Of the one thing that we all exist from, you know?
Whoa, man. That is so beautiful.
So I have a constant, like when I see my kids, I don't just see them as my children. I see them as humans. And I'm like, well, the first responsibility I have is to put a good human in the world, which means you're going to carry your lunch into school because you need to learn responsibility and you need to take ownership and you need to feel pride and you need to be someone who uses a turn signal when you're switching lanes.
Right.
So carry your lunch. I'm not carrying it for you. And I don't do it in a mean way, but I'm like, you carry your lunch to school. That's part of going to school. And for me, it's like, you know, when I tell you no, it's because I know this is for your good down the road. Right. You might get mad at me right now and be upset at me. I don't care.
Yeah.
You know I love you. Like, if I'm like, if I'm with the two kids and one needs a little more attention than the other one, I give it. But then I always make sure to go over and give a little like pinch or a little kiss and be like, who's my big boy? And then go on. Because... And I mean, that's just me being sensitive to the idea that I don't want either of them to feel left out. Also knowing that there are times when one needs a little more and it's okay that I give them more. You know what I mean? So it's, again, what we talked about earlier about like, hey, are you just looking out for people without sacrificing your own self? I'm not sacrificing my need to be a dad to one child against the other one. And at the same time, it's no skin off my back or energy taken away to go over and make sure the other one knows like, yo, I just talked to them and did this thing that they need to do and told you to wait a second, but now I'm giving you a little bump on the butt to say, hey, I'm here too, you know?
Wow. So this is what's really fascinating about you. Many things are fascinating about you, but so here you have on one side this, like, I don't even know, a savant or something when it comes to parenting, and you're blowing my mind for a few different reasons, because you're kind of saying things that, so like my meditation teacher has said to me, literally it skips a generation, except he was talking about like sometimes like in anyway, the transmission of some like Buddhist ideas sometimes actually skips generations.
Uh-huh.
Anyway, and then the other thing that Ram Dass says is I was asking him, like, what's the best, you know, how to be a great dad? What's the best way to be a great dad for Forrest, my son? And he goes, first of all,
such a great name.
Thanks, man. He goes, first of all, he's a soul.
Yeah.
Not your son, soul first. Yeah. And then your son. So soul over role, as they say, soul over role. So the idea is like, first, you're the spinning, beautiful, sort of very temporary manifestation of the whole that's taken a birth in a human incarnation, but from your own free will. You decided to take the birth. You wanted to come and swim around in this particular part of the resort of the universe, so to speak. And you picked your parents and you picked these experiences.
Is that real?
Well, is it real?
But that's what Ram Dass says?
Yeah.
Because that's, God. That was another thing I used to always think when I was really young. Not really young. Maybe it was like when I got into my 20s where I was like, I think before you're born, you pick the life you want to have because you want that challenge. So like people that get – like Tiffany Haddish, for example. You take Tiffany Haddish and she's had a tough road to get to where she is as a person. And you're like, yeah, but only her could have got through that.
Right.
You know what I mean? And I used to always think that. I'm like, oh, I think I picked these things, you know. Even though maybe I picked having a dad that was gone because all I ever want to do is be built into someone that could be a dad, you know, even though I was like, I mean, I don't know. Sometimes, like, I'm working on a bit right now where I'm like, man, I love being a dad. It's my favorite thing in the world. But when I see people without kids, I'm like, oh, what a good life. Yeah. What are you going to Italy? Where are you going? Are you doing anything with you? Get away. You can go wherever you want, you know? So I definitely, that's refreshing to hear that, you know, the idea that you picked it and you embrace it.
You need that fucking clay to drop in the river, man. Like, yeah. That is, you know, that's the concept. And if you forget that, things can seem really fucked up because you start feeling like, you know, when you find yourself in a pickle, you're like, and you lose track and you don't realize, like, listen, you have been, human incarnation is like in the Shao, in the like Kung Fu movies, when you get welcomed into the temple, mm-hmm. and then you get your fucking ass kicked, like having to do those weird Shaolin exercises or whatever, yeah. like pouring water while you're like standing on spikes while you're all that shit. That's what human incarnation is considered. It's like you've been allowed into this very advanced training place, which is our lives, and you're given these opportunities to basically begin to sand yourself down and become something really beautiful and wonderful.
See, this is where I was. This ties back into what we were saying way earlier, and I want to get this out. Another problem with this business, or anyone who's chasing a dream or a goal, is you came here to LA with an idea of what you wanted, and so then you pursue it, and you pursue it, and you pursue it, and either it happens or it doesn't, and either you stay in the game or you don't. But if you stay in the game, then you start to be like, was I wrong? Did I pick the wrong? I said I was coming here to do this and I haven't done it yet. So am I wrong or am I not good enough? Or did I pick the wrong thing? Am I clouded? Am I supposed to be a chef, but I picked this because I don't know? Or, you know, I have tons of friends that came to be actors and then they produce reality television. You know what I mean? Like, what is it? And so that's another thing that can get in the way is you're just constantly like, well, if I'm going to abide by, because we live on a spiritual level, you know, not everyone does, by the way, we live on a spiritual level. So if we believe that we picked our life and then we're living the life that we're living and it's not going the way that we always thought it was going, then you start questioning like, am I wrong? Was I wrong in this choice? I'm 17 years into this. Mm. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
That's something I battle a lot because especially when you're seeing your other friends like move forward, you're like, yeah, what is that? I wanted to do this too. Why is it? You know what I mean? And then you're just like, you know, you question it. So like knowing that like maybe you picked the life that you wanted to lead and you picked where you wanted to be and then you start seeing what's happening around you and you see the things that are out of your control because you try and control. And then this is where I've been lately is I'm letting go of the control and just trying to like be like, all right, I'm just trying to find contentment in my life and then thinking once I do that, the things that are supposed to happen will come to me. And that's what I've been telling the universe, like, I'm just going to go and work as hard as I can. Like we were saying off mic earlier, at some point you just can only work as hard as you can. And then I'm just hoping that the universe is going to then reveal itself to me instead of me constantly trying to be like, I'm going to do this. I'm going to do this. Why isn't this work? You know,
Jay, first of all, I when I came, when I started working at the Comedy Store, I remember talking to one of the Sklar brothers.
Yeah.
Because they were on TV a bunch, and I said to them, what's it like to have made it? And he laughed. I can't remember which Sklar I was talking to, but he laughed in the best way. He's like, what are you talking about? I'm like, you made it. He's like, what? Do you know? Like, no. We're doing... And then the other day, I was talking to somebody who is so successful. And they were expressing to me how insecure they feel all the time. And then you are... You got to be one of the best storytellers out there, man. And like, you were on fucking Twin Peaks. You have like these incredible specials. You're brilliant, and you have because you're in your body, and you are using a different relative gauge, I guess, to measure where you're at. You've always been to me. You're like, fuck, Larson's like killing it. I've never
two things. One. If I stopped right now and never did stand up or acting or anything else again, people would look at him and be like, wow, he had a really good career.
Yeah.
Because you got to look at it like that. You're like, look at all the things you've done. If you look comparatively all the time, like if I compare myself to like younger comics, they would kill to have what I have. But then I look at friends and I would kill to have what they have. And then if you really get down to it, it's like, what do you ultimately want? And if you ultimately want happiness and you decide that to let go of all this shit we've been pursuing and just trusting that whatever decision you make will be the right decision because you're making a decision or you're trusting your gut or you're following a path and it's going to open itself up to you. Like if I decided to quit today and open the bodega that I've always wanted to open, I bet I could have an amazing life, but I'm just trusting in the idea that I haven't yet. And that's because I'm doing what I'm supposed to be doing.
Dude, I was reading your story about, and you're a great writer. So I'm reading your story about working with David Lynch, which for a lot of people would be like the apex of their life. Just the chance to get to work with him or be around him or whatever would be like, and your story on your website is so fucking cool and so well written. But I got really excited when you were talking about how you love the Beat Poets.
Yeah.
And you know why they were called the Beats?
No.
Well, now this could be wrong, but what I read is I used to think it was because like, you know, like a beat. And I think Kerouac in one of his poems kind of says, alludes to that. But then I heard another interpretation, which is they were beat.
Oh, yeah.
Meaning they lost. They just decided, yeah, we've been beat. We're the beat generation. We've been beaten down. We've lost. We've given up. We've completely given up because we lost. Like Maria Bamford's got a great joke, which is when people ask, like, so what are you up to? I'm sorry, anyone listening is a fan of this joke. I fuck every joke up by parrot. I'm so sorry. But her joke is so along the lines of where people are like, so what are you up to these days? And she's like, oh, I stopped.
That's tight.
Yeah, man. And that attitude to me is so crucial for me to be happy, which is that the moment I put it down, the role, so to speak, or the story that I told myself years and years and years ago about, oh, this is how it's going to be. Or when I realized like I'm comparing my career to like Rogan's career.
Yeah.
Just why don't I just get to pay someone to crucify me?
Yeah.
Why don't I just pay someone to like get some, just like hang me on a fucking crucifix. Yeah. Are you going to compare yourself to someone who's existing in the top one percentile of a particular industry?
Yeah.
And not expect to be like suffering? To me, it's like the moment and it's not like I give up. It's not like I'm like, oh, I'm not going to do it anymore. I'm going to go find some other way or any of that shit. The moment I'm just like, well, I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know. There's just this right now, and I know I like to make stuff. And then the more I connect with that, that's where it seems to start happening. But anytime I'm doing the game of either like looking back to a me when I was like just out of college or me like 10 years ago and try to like be the thing that would please that person 10 years ago. I'm literally trying to please a person 10 years younger than me that had a mom, that had a dad, that didn't get cancer, that didn't have a baby. And then anytime I do that shit, I look at now I'm so lucky because I have this beautiful kid and I look at him.
Yeah.
And I'm like, this makes it all make sense. If I fucking had a time machine, I wouldn't use it, man. for fear that I would mess something up and that little boy wouldn't be on the planet anymore.
Sure.
You know what I mean? So what I'm saying is these games we play with ourselves, they're self-torture.
Yeah. I rewrote my story. My whole life was defined by the fact that my dad bounced. Every single thing. I would walk around the world as if he was always watching, like if he was behind. Like I used to, I remember walking across campus in college. I was on the right side of the quad. It was wintertime.
Yeah.
And I was like, he came up here. He knows you're here. And he wants to, he can't talk to you, but he's watching. And I would walk with this like confidence and bravado that he was watching. Every time I would play baseball, every time I would do stand up, I'm like, he's going to, even to the day when he died and I went through his apartment, like I went back home and I went through his apartment. And I looked around his apartment looking for things about me. You know what I mean? That's all I was looking for. But it defined me. So much of my stand-up, there were jokes about, you know, my dad and stuff like that. And then I realized, I'm like, you don't know what his path was. You don't know why he wasn't around or what got in the way. And like, you know, I found out these different things. Anyway, the other day I said to my son, I was like, he said something about his papa. That's my father-in-law. And I go, yeah, your papa, your grandpa. And he goes, who's my grandpa? And I go, well, you know, my dad. And he goes, Norman? And my dad's name was Norman, and all his friends called him Normie. And I decided like 2 years ago that he was going to be Normie to my kids. You know, I'm like, yeah, your grandpa Normie. And he's like, my daughter, who's hardcore, 3 years old, she goes, yeah, he's dead. And I'm like, yeah, he's not here. But they're going to know him as in that same thing that I talked about earlier, how like I wish my mom had like made us call him birthdays or whatever. They're going to know him that, yeah, he was your grandpa Normie and he was an antique dealer. He played trumpet. He only listened to classical music. He was an artist that welded and he loved to be outside. He loved to work with granite and cast iron and he was very creative and he was big and he had big blue eyes and he was mystical and he was into like wisdom and I'm going to tell them all the positive stuff. And then when they get older, when they have questions, I'm like, yeah, you know, I don't know what it was about my dad, but he wasn't around, you know what I mean? And which is why I, you know, and then just, I'll tell them everything else, but they're definitely, I'm not going to leave him out of their story. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah,
hey, I'm going to fill you in on what I know about him. And like, they have stuff in their room that he gave to me. And I'm like, yeah, your grandpa Normie gave us that. You know what I mean? Because I'm like, time for me to rewrite it. Instead of being the dude who was abandoned, how about being the guy that had this so much of me? When I got in touch with him when I was like 25, we started emailing, and I remember reading his emails being like, holy shit, this is how I write. I write just like him.
Whoa.
Like he would, I remember he was like, oh, it's a snowy day today in Hamilton, or no, I forget, this town next to Essex. He's like, a snowy day. I'm up in the, you know, I live in an 18th century old house and I'm in the attic. It's cold up here. There's no heat. When I look outside, all I see is snow. And I'm going to trudge down to the Richdale and drop two antiques in the mail and then come back for the day. And I was like, Jesus Christ, this is how I like think. This is how I write. And I was like, that's when I finally got a chance to identify a part of myself that I didn't know where to place. So like when I take showers with my son or I teach my daughter how to use a drill or all the things that I wish I, that the things I taught myself how to shave. I remember being in college freshman year and I was shaving, right? And I would shave and then shower, right? And there was this kid, Eddie Hannon, who was like a fifth year senior transfer. It was like big hockey dude. Awesome kid from Maine. And he's like, what are you doing? I go, what do you mean? He goes, you shave and then you shower? I go, yeah. He goes, no, you shower. The hot water and air gets in your skin, makes it easier to shave. You shave after. And I was like, oh, all right. And I had never known. I just never knew. And I'm like, all these little things I'm going to get to teach my kids, which is, again, not only does parenting skip a generation, but all the it took me. So it took me till 20 or 18 years old to learn how to shave. He'll learn how to shave at, I don't know, 12. You know what I mean? So he's already got a 6-year head start on me with that. I'm going to teach him how to use money. I'm going to teach my daughter how to use money. I'm going to teach them how to like drill, saw, build, how to be respectful. I've already been teaching them how to shake hands at this young age. I'm going to teach them how you look in an eye. I'm going to, dude, I took my daughter on Saturday to the self-realization, you know that place in the Palisades?
Sure.
And I said to her, I'm like, hey, this is a place where people come and meditate because they know I meditate. And then some of Reed's teachers meditate, and sometimes I find him in the backyard with his legs crossed and him just sitting and his eyes closed.
Shit.
I mean, he'll do it for like 6 seconds, but he's like, I'm meditating. And like, meditation is going to be a part of their life. They're going to know it. And when they get old enough, then we'll get them into it where they can like take a class and learn TM or whatever form that they want to learn. But so we're walking around that self-realization. And I was like, hey, that there, you know, you have to be quiet when you're here. There's not like yelling and screaming. And my daughter, who's 3, we were there for an hour the whole time, talk like this, daddy, daddy, come over here. And whispered the whole time. And there's a chapel there, you know? And we went in. I go, we can't go in. I held her. I'm like, look in. She goes, can we go in and say a prayer? And I go, yeah. And we went in, sat down. I was like, she sat, I sat. She's got her hands like together and like did her own little prayer. And she's like, let's go. And I'm like, hold on. I'm in the middle of mine. Give me 2 seconds. And it was like amazing. And I'm like, oh, the more before you have kids, you challenge yourself to learn, the more you can offer and feed into that next generation so that they know more. They're more awake. You know what I mean? They have more knowledge. They have knowledge of, like, I want my kids to have a knowledge of money because it's something I never had. Like how to save.
Yeah.
You make a dollar, you put at least 25 cents away. That's right. Just start getting used to that.
Yeah.
You know, so that they can like be financially set. It's like that guy who did the graduation address at Morehouse College. Did you see that guy?
No.
You know what he did?
Oh, he paid off everyone's
Student loan.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And he said to the alumni, and he goes, and all the alumni here today, he goes, this is my class. 2019 is my class.
Wow.
I'm going to pay for all them. Basically saying to the alumni, get off your ass.
Wow.
And someone else sponsor the next year. And like, if they can start, especially, I'm white, but in the black community, I've always had this like, I always had a passion for Judaism and I always had a passion for Native Americans and African Americans because I always felt as a kid who had nobody and felt like as waste and discard and having a dad that didn't love me, I felt like only felt connection to like Native Americans being ripped away from their place,
whoa,
being African Americans just like being beat down and, you know, not being able to vote. Like Martin Luther King was an idol of mine, O.J. Simpson, you know, Hank Aaron. These were all my idols.
Yeah.
They were all black men. And so when I saw that, I was like, oh, that he's like supporting the young black men in America and giving them a head start. And as a dad, I say to my wife, I'm like, the only reason I want money is to be able to give them a head start, not so that when they turn 25, I can be like, here's $200,000, but so I can say, yeah, you don't have to pay for college.
Right.
Or you know what? You do have to pay for it. You give it to me. And then I take that money and I put it in a savings account. And then when they're 25 and they're like moving to a city, we say, hey, how about we go to that city and you buy a condo and you can start having an investment so that there's money in your life and you can start, you know, building something that's going to help you succeed so that you're not 43 like me, don't own a house and have student loan debt.
Yes,
you know what,
man,
I mean?
This, you are the answer, man. You know, I'm making you my father guru. No, I am. Like, I don't have it. Like, it's so funny. Everything you're saying, I'm just like soaking it in because it's so like, it's so on the level. It's so good. And so many people went through the divorce boom, man. Like,
yeah,
so many people are children of divorce. They didn't have a father figure. Maybe they didn't have a mother figure. And they have no idea how to do it. They have no idea how to be in a relationship that lasts. They have no idea how to be married. They certainly have no idea how to, like, be a good father. They're self-absorbed, self-obsessed. And within that, there's so much room just to continue this never-ending shit snowball that's been rolling through time.
Yeah.
And the moment someone like you, like, grabs the energy that very easily you could be bitter. Very easily you could just
bitter?
Decide. Yeah.
Oh, well, I have been forever, you know? And I constantly work on it. And I still get it. But I just like, you know, it's the same thing we're talking about. I wouldn't sit here and talk about my bitterness, but I do get it. And I work at it for years, dude. I went to therapy, still do, for years, because I'm like, oh, I constantly need to work. Otherwise, you just fall into old ruts and old habits. And when I have bad days, I just have to be like, all right, man, you got to work at this. You have to, like, you know, do something to motivate. Like, and I've also learned lately to give myself breaks. Yesterday afternoon, I was like, take a break, dude. Like, it's not happening today.
Yeah.
Go lay in the hammock for an hour.
That's what I want to know, man, is how are you like, how are you balancing your stand up, your writing, the fucking hard work you're putting into your projects, and how do you balance that with being a dad? How are you making these two things coincide? And also, how are you staying funny? You know that myth, or like a lot of people say, once you have kids, you're not funny anymore. It eats me alive, man. I haven't been on stage in 6 months. I'm terrified to get back on stage. Because what if it's all gone? Like, what if I can't be funny anymore?
Yeah, well, you will be. You're a funny person in general, so it's not going to matter. I first of all, I don't know. The way I balanced it was I just said the kids are more important, you know? And I was like, dude, trust me. You know, as a stand-up, you got to be on the road. And I always said, like, I just don't want to be on the road because I knew I was going to want to be home with my kids. And now I'm looking at, like, guys, like, you look at Segura. Remember how much road Segura did way before he had kids?
Yes.
He was always on the road. Yeah. I remember thinking, like, what's he doing? Like, don't you want to get on a TV show or something like that? And it's like, oh, no. Tom did all that work on the road, built a fan base, built an act, built the ability to write stand-up continuously. So then now all that stuff just came to him because he worked on that one thing.
Yes.
And that was just never the route I took. And I always look at it, and not in an envious way, but I'm like, ah, man, I wish I kind of had done that. But it's okay. I picked this road. So I feel like the balance hasn't been – first of all, if you're able to conceptualize the idea that balance doesn't have to be 50-50, it could be 70-30, then it becomes, you know, if your balance is just putting 100% into your life, whether that be 70% here and 30% there, but 100% into that 30, into the 70, then you're going to be balanced.
Wow, cool.
So, like, I could be doing way more work in stand-up and being getting up. I could be getting up every night if I wanted to, but then I have to pay for a sitter because my wife is out of town. And I just started looking at it like, this is all you can do because, like, my wife is out of town last night and tonight, right? But I have to get out tonight. I have to. So I got a sitter for tonight. But there's no way I want my kids to go two nights in a row without me being there. Last night, we did we hung out at my neighbor's for a while after we ate dinner at a table by ourselves listening to music because that's what we do. Went over and played at my neighbor's. Then we came over, played out back. Everybody had to get in their PJs. Then we sat and read six books. We like read six books and then we go into the room and then hang out.
What do you mean you read six books?
We read six books. I picked two. They each one of them picked two.
I mean, but the kids, like, these books 5 minutes each or something, right?
Yeah, something like that. Okay, but I mean, we read books for like 40 minutes. Sometimes we do eight, sometimes it's two, but a lot of on average it's at least four. I like to just, like, for me it like winds them down. And my friends were like, they're like, you know, god, that, you know, finally, we got the kids where you can just put them in their room and say goodnight. And I'm like, yeah, I just kind of like having 40 minutes. I always block off 7 to 8 o'clock is going to be the time for, like, starting to, like, do the bedtime thing. Because for me, I like it. Like, I like we brush our teeth together. We go in there. We'll clean up together. We might go for a walk around the neighborhood as part of that. Then come home and read. Some nights they watch TV. Some nights it's like, okay, you get TV tonight. And they'll watch TV. And then they, you know, they go to bed. But I just don't like to do it. As far as the balancing thing is, I've just put, I feel like I've put part of my career on the back burner to focus on them. And part of that is that my wife, her job calls her to travel as well. So I can't, I don't want a life where before kids, it used to be, she would go away. We went through a stretch one time. She went away on a Monday, came back on Thursday. I left Thursday to do clubs Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday. I came home Sunday. She left on Monday. I left on Thursday. And we went like a month and we had been in the house together like three times. And I just kind of looked at it and like, my wife is in sales. You can't just leave sales and get another job at the same amount of money you make. So it was like, family is number one. And right now she makes more money keeping that job than she would as if she left that job and we focused on mine. You know what I mean? So I was like, hey, I'll keep hitting singles and swinging for home runs, and you keep the doubles up, and eventually, like you said, it's going to settle into my spot, you know?
This is your spot.
Yeah, well, this is like, yeah, for sure, but I still am hoping that we hit something where, like, I'm able to take my comedy and my love for parenting and being a dad and put that into a show, and where the show comes into our world.
You have to.
Yeah, that's what we're trying. You
got to, man, because we don't, like... It's so cool. Yeah, I don't know what it's going to be that like the, it's like really cool listening to this part of the, like the matter as it's beginning to like form into something. And I don't know what your, the details of what you're working on, but holy shit, you know, as someone who's a fan of the Beat Poets, Kerouac, Ginsberg, you know, Shogyam Trungpa Rinpoche, my teacher's teacher, was Allen Ginsberg's teacher.
Oh, wow.
And he was this great Buddhist teacher, real, real controversial figure. But you know how they met? Arguing over a fucking cab. Like, Ginsberg got in the cab and Trungpa Rinpoche got in the cab at the same time. And they, like, for a second were, like, arguing over who. And then they shared the cab. And then it's the craziest coincidence, because this is like a, in Tibetan Buddhism, which is known as a tulku, or a reincarnation. The Dalai Lama is one. So it's one where they go to the child and they show all this stuff to the child, and the child like picks the items that he had in the previous incarnation.
Yeah, that's right, yeah.
And to you
pick,
would,
to pick the Dalai Lama, right?
Well, yeah, and they do it for other, the other tulkus as well, other. But as a side note, if you want to add to your list of people to connect to that have been that are refugees, the Tibetans, man, they got fucking kicked out of their homeland by the Chinese, and they like, it's a really beautiful story, man. But anyway, Trungpa Rinpoche, his advice for how to like create what he called an enlightened society, mm-hmm, is to create a sacred home environment. And that is what you're doing. And
I just heard this recently, someone else. And politically, my whole thing has always been like, why are we not just taking care of Main Street? We spend $6 trillion a year on wars. If we put that money into here, like, why are we not doing that? And then again, if you build that home, then you build the kids. Well, you know, yeah. Please continue. Sorry.
Well, that's it. You just said it. I mean, that, like, all these plans and all the stuff that we all want. Everyone wants a world to be a beautiful, harmonious world.
Yeah.
But in the moment you decide, okay, I'm going to fucking, you know, I'm going to try to become a famous this or a famous that. I'm going to exert my ego into the world and try to get this very temporary success at the cost of abandoning my children, abandoning my wife. What ends up happening is, okay, great. You made $1 million and you've got some great comedy albums, but you had three children who are severely neurotic because they were overshadowed by you, and they had a feeling that they were unwelcome visitors into their own home because they were getting in the way of your art. And then now those three kids are going to have kids, and now we have this never-ending sort of fragmentation in society that's happening. Whereas the moment someone like you gets lucky enough and smart enough to like pull it together and to like focus on the actual like fundamental, the heart of society is the family, then people like me who are just like, well, I'm in awe, man. Like, I did not do this. Like, I'm soaking it in. And then that.
Yeah, gets, but we all have a different path. We all are going to be learning at different stages and different times, you know. And at the same time, I also look at some people that might not be as present at home with their family. Doesn't mean they're not a good parent. And ultimately, at the end of the day, like, they might be doing stuff for the greater good of the world by, you know, being able to, you know, do their art, you know. I have no idea. I just know for me, this right. was like, even though I fight with it, like, man, I wish I was working more. I wish I could be doing more, you know. And then, you know what, that happens during the day. And then like 4:45 when I'm going to pick up the kids and I get there and I'm with them, I forget about all that, you know, because I'm just like, well, this, I love that I get to pick them up, and I love that I get to go in their room and they can show me what they did, and I ask them and I challenge them. I challenge the fuck out of my kids. Not to like be anything, just to think differently. You know what I mean? Like, if they say something some way, I go, no, that, what if it's this way? Or I go, hey, get up there and call out to so-and-so. Like, I'm like, roll down the window. I go, ask that guy where he's going. Like, just a stranger, like, where you going? And they're like, huh? And I'm like, dah, dah. And they're like, why'd we do that, Dad? And I'm like, why wouldn't we do that?
Cool.
You know, just because whatevs.
This is so cool, man. I'm like, I'm not joking, man. I'm going to like make, you're my dad guru now. Like, I'm going to, do you mind if I reach out to you randomly? Crazy? This is the coolest thing ever. Like,
there's no person on the planet that would see Duncan Trussell calling on their phone that wouldn't be stoked to pick it up.
Thank you, brother. Thank you. This is so good, man. I really hope, and I mentioned this on when I was on your podcast. I so hope that you write this book, man, because it's like, for you, it might seem, I don't know what it seems like, but for someone like a new dad like me, this is shit that, like, you know, is so useful. Because my dad, similarly to Norm, similar to Normie, my dad was more present in my life, and he's a wonderful, wonderful man. But there was some, as many fathers that were in Vietnam, you know, there's some stuff. Yeah. And like, I don't have, like, I'm really, like, playing it, like, I'm spitballing, so to speak, when it comes to being a dad, and I don't want to spitball. You know what I mean? Like, so I just think a lot of people like me need people like you, because also I don't need some sanctimonious motherfucker who's, like, blurting out some moral, like, corrective Bill O'Reilly-style bullshit about how to be a good dad, or some hyper-masculine motherfucker, like, talking about it. Somehow you're, like, balancing all of your comedic skill and your talent in with this way of conveying, like, fatherhood. It's really badass.
Ah, thanks, man. I appreciate that.
How can people find you, Mr. Larson?
Jay Larson Comedy on Instagram and Facebook, jlarsoncomedy.com. My podcast, The Through Line, you can get on all your podcast venues. What do you call it?
I have no idea.
You know what I mean.
All the podcasts.
If you
venues.
Listen to podcasts, you know where. Just look for The Through Line, THRU, and they can listen to your episode that you did with me.
Why did I think your podcast was called The Crab Feet?
That was. I did that for a long time, but now it's just, that was with me and Ryan, and now it's just me doing The Through Line.
Cool, man.
Yeah, man.
Cool. Hare Krishna. Thank you, Jay. All the links find Jay are going to be at DuncanTrussell.com.
Thanks,
buddy. I'll see you again soon.
Yeah.
Much thanks to Jay Larson for coming on the show. Definitely listen to his podcast, Through Line with Jay Larson. And much thanks to Squarespace for sponsoring this episode of the DTFH. Don't forget, subscribe to us at Patreon.com/DTFH. Give us a nice rating on iTunes, won't you? Until next time, Hare Krishna.